Hello, I'm Amanda Haste, President of NCIS, and I'd like to welcome you to our podcast on publishing your thesis. I'm delighted to introduce our wonderful panel from Great Britain, comprising one editor and two academics. We have Jess Farr-Cox of The Dirty Comma, who's a freelance editor specialising in academic books, Dr. Lyle Skeynes, who's a creative digital writer, and she'll be focusing on publishing your research in journals, and Dr. Jasmine Shadrach, music sociologist, whose monograph based on her doctoral research has just been published. She'll be giving us insights into the emotional aspects of turning your thesis into a book. The panel will be discussing their experiences and answering questions about the process and strategies involved in publishing your research. So let's jump right in with Jess Farr-Cox, who's going to tell us what an academic editor does and why it's good to have one.
You are really bored of your PhD by the time you get to that stage, right? You've spent 3 years or 4 years or maybe longer wrestling with it, getting it, you know, it's a sort of means to an end, right? It's a way of getting the qualification and you don't really want to read it again. You're so tired of it. Whereas to us, it's this wonderful, new, exciting thing. And I think that working with an editor can get you excited about your work and what an emotional roller coaster it is and how stressful it can be. And I think it really helps to have another person there going, wow, chapter two is really interesting. This is amazing. Oh my God, I can't wait to read the next bit. Like that really helps. Like, because to me, it's this new exciting project that I'm going to work on with you for a couple of months. And I'm really enthused about it. So it helps you to get a little bit of that beginning of the PhD feeling back where it's all still to come and you're excited about it again. But it really depends on what kind of shape the thesis is in. So there have been some that I've worked on where I've worked with customers for maybe, oh gosh, might be 6, 7, 8 months, and we might still be making, if they depends how long ago the PhD is. So I'm about to start one where the PhD is nearly 10 years old and there's an awful lot that's happened in the scholarship since then, and there's very little of it that's really going to survive intact. We're going to have to take account of all the work that's been done since then, and most of it's going to get rewritten. So it varies from area to area depending on how active those research communities are. But I think it's very useful as the author to be able to hand over some of the boring jobs to another person to go, look, I've had to move my images around. Can you just renumber all the figures? Or apparently we have to use a different citation style. Can you sort that out? Yes, of course I can. That's fine. That will take you hours. It will take me 10 minutes. So I think that's one of the roles that an editor can play, is to do all the boring stuff to free you up to actually do the writing and to try and stay excited about it. Because I think the thing that really wrings the energy out of you as the author is being told, oh, no, sorry, you can't get permission for figure one. Now all your other figures are going to have to be renumbered and moved around. And you just go, oh, God, I can't bear it. Whereas I just go, yeah, that's fine. That'll take me an hour. Don't worry about it. As you were. So I think that's quite a big, like, it doesn't sound like much, but I promise you when you're in the throes of trying to get this bloody thing published, that stuff really makes a difference, I think.
Thank you. I'd just like to bring Lyle in here because Lyle has, well, you've published books anyway, haven't you? But you've, for your thesis, you made it into a lot of journal articles. Okay, Lyle, can you tell us about going down the journal article route rather than the monograph route?
I mainly went the journal route because, the nature of my PhD was somewhat untraditional in that it was a practice-based PhD. So it included not only the critical component, the chapters that really earn you the PhD, but also a novella and a digital version of that novella. So even just one of those elements would have sort of exploded academic publishers' brains. But to have all three of them together was just, my examiners very much wanted it published as a package because they wanted to use it for teaching. But it was, I queried the went through all the publishers on my list and they either couldn't see it as a research thing because creative writing as research is still a very new topic and they sort of went, we don't need any more creative writing craft books. And I'm like, that's not what this is. Or, you know, they just couldn't see how to put it together. I got lucky with the first chapter that I published in that I had presented at a conference and someone who was guest editing a special edition of a journal, they were doing an experimental issue where they wanted it to be a hybrid. So they wanted papers that included digital components in some way. She actually requested that I submit. And along with that particular chapter that I'd given the talk on, they published my entire digital novel with it. I assume it's also accessible except for the portion that's in Adobe Flash, which will die at the end of this year, sadly. But that was nice because it meant that for future journal articles, I could refer to that. It was published. And then the rest of the chapters, I just sort of looked at them and went, okay, they're all going to go as journal articles. So I got 7 different journal articles out of those, which was actually turned out to be a really good thing because they actually stood alone fairly easily. I didn't sort of, my thesis wasn't one that each chapter hung on the one before. So it was very easy to publish them that way. And then of course I'm in the UK system. I am not yet broken free of academia. It's in my plan, but it's a 3-year plan right now where I'm still subject to the research excellence framework, which is a little grading system that the UK has wherein monographs are only double weighted. So an entire monograph only counts as much as 2 journal articles. So I could have had a monograph that counted as 2 journal articles or 7 journal articles. So it actually wound up much better for me in the end to have those journal articles on my record. I actually really enjoyed that process, and compared to the book publishing process, it was faster and yet still allowed me to pace out my publishing throughout the first couple of years of my lectureship so that it wasn't sort of all at once and get this big project done and get it in. It was just little pieces here and there, which was very nice.
Thank you. Now I'm going to throw the floor open, as it were. We've got one question from Zamira. She says she's going to defend her thesis in October. So well done for getting that far. She's contacted Routledge and they've basically said we've got far more than we can handle and suggest that it sounds a very interesting topic, but to contact an alternative publisher. Jess, can I come to you on this one?
Sure. So I'd say I'm not very surprised by that. I think a lot of publishers are saying this kind of thing right now. This speaks to something Lyle just said, actually, which is the ref. I think there's a lot of pressure on PhD students to publish their thesis as a monograph. And I think, as Lyle said, it's not always the right thing to do. And what happens is that the publishers get this huge kind of deluge of proposals, usually in October and January, of newly minted PhD students who've been told, right now you have to turn it into a book. That's the next thing to do. It isn't necessarily the next thing to do. I think you would do well to think about doing what Lyle's done and turning some of it into articles. I think turning it into a book doesn't have to happen soon unless you're under pressure from your department to meet the ref deadline. I don't think that has to happen anytime soon. I think you should take your time and find a publisher, ideally a specialist, I would say.
Jasmine, we've got a really interesting question from Barbara. I'm going to paraphrase this slightly. She says, do you see any movement on tenure committees? And I'm going to substitute in academia, accepting digital-only publication instead of print publication?
Well, I think it really depends on who's involved in the board because, for example, I think there's certain faculty, certain department that would much prefer to have a hard copy. It goes straight in the library. It's easy reference. But similarly, when I submitted mine, I had to have a hard copy and a digital copy. But then you sort of think, well, where does the digital copy end up? There's no way. You can't track it, can you? You can't go to the library, go right there it is. But you do have, there's an online repository, but it becomes, well, maybe that was just particular to my ex institution where they were moving up from one system to a new system. And it meant that lots of stuff suddenly got lost in the process and it became quite difficult to trace things. And when you're trying to research or trying to locate something, that's just at the wrong time that's happening. So I think it's very dependent on the faculty and what their needs are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. A question from Phil here. Now, Phil's just writing his dissertation, and he says, obviously, it needs to be sufficiently academic to pass the test, but his personal style of writing history is to tell a story. He says, I love the narrative, Is it really possible to, one, do a dissertation in a narrative style, or two, adapt a dissertation to a narrative style that would be of interest to a general reader of history, his own field in Mexico and religion? Have other folks done this before? Jess?
Yeah, I would say definitely. I think the real test is going to be whether the publisher thinks the people will want to read it. And I think history that's written in that way can be very engaging. I think one of the things that I've noticed a lot with my customers, and Jazz will probably have a view here, is that we often take the views of our supervisors very, very seriously, but that we only have one or two supervisors. So even if you include your external, that's still the views of only three people tops. And I think what can happen is if your supervisor has a very strong view on the correct way of doing your discipline, then you kind of internalize that because you've worked with that person for a really long time. And if your supervisor has been banging on at you for 3 or 4 years about how you absolutely mustn't do it the way that you do it, then it's really easy to lose sight of the fact that actually that might be what the readers want. There have been several PhDs that I've worked on recently where the student has said to me, oh, I'm going to turn this into a book. And I've just gone, oh, really? Yeah, I'm really busy. I don't want to do that. Because they're good PhDs. They do what the PhD is meant to do. But nobody's going to want to read 200 pages of that crap. It's just not sellable. No one's going to want to read it. It's too academic. It's a thesis. There's a transition that a text has to go through between being a thesis and being a book. And one of the things that has to happen is you have to take away all the stuff that says this is a thesis. You have to take out the literature review. You can leave it there, but you can't call it a literature review, right? You have to say, add in the kind of stuff that you're probably already doing and say, let's look at what the position is already. Let's look at what other scholars have said. Because people who don't have a PhD don't know that that's the structure of a thesis. And so you need to kind of hold their hand a little bit and walk them through and create a narrative. One of the things that I do as an editor is I create a narrative. I sit down with my author and I say, how are we going to link this chapter to this chapter so that the reader doesn't get lost between chapter 2 and chapter 3? And what often happens is examiners will say, no, you need to publish these two as separate chapters or as separate articles. So they need to be disjoined from each other as separate. Like Niall was saying, they need to not hang off each other. But when you make it into a book, often that's a really helpful structure for the reader. I think if you can find the right publisher, I don't think that should be a barrier to publication at all. I think in many ways it might help you, actually.
I reckon, well, Phil actually has published quite a lot of books already, haven't you, Phil? And they're great reads.
There you go.
So, you know, but his problem at the moment is getting a PhD out of it.
Have you considered a PhD by publication?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I talked to the folks about it, and that you have to be a faculty member.
Right,
or
I see.
Have your undergraduate and graduate degree from that institution for them to be willing to do that. That's what
right.
I heard.
So I'd say that varies from institution to institution, because certainly at Bristol we have done PhDs by publication, people that I have never heard of and who've never been students with us. So it might be worth looking around. But if you published a lot already, that might be a sensible route for you. Sorry, it's just a side issue, but it might be a sensible thing to look into.
I will say, too, that on the question of bucking the style in your particular field, it varies. I'm in digital media. My most recent examination, she literally presented her PhD thesis as a computer game. Brilliant. Loved it. But that's my field, you know, and I also know enough to go, okay, I couldn't go all the way through this, so I'm going to go dig into the code and just see it. Great. But history in particular is really conservative. So anything that you do, I mean, I have a friend who got her PhD using film as historical artifacts, and all the historians were like, what? That's not history. They can be really conservative. So I would just double check with supervisor and definitely as far as the PhD itself goes, to know that you're doing what you need to do for examiners, not to, you know, just walk out of the room and go, you don't know the field, so we're not going to give it to you. And then for publication, it's going to be whatever the publisher wants, you know, so it's always writing to a certain audience, no matter what you're doing.
Thank you. We have a question here from Hannah, a very succinct question. Is there a good resource for finding a publisher? And Barbara, who actually worked in the publishing industry until she retired not so long ago, has replied, I only know UA resources like a temporary subscription to Literary Marketplace and or the Directory of University Presses. Obviously, that is US-based.
Yes.
It's US instead of UA, sorry.
Yeah, I did. I was going to ask what UA was, at University of Alabama.
I know, it's a typo.
So that's US resources. How did you all go about finding a publisher? Because I tried to get my thesis published for a year. I tried. I can't remember which publishers I tried, but the ones in my field that seemed like a good bet. So, Jasmine, how did you go about finding a publisher before you met Jess and she ended up doing all the hard work?
This was the strange thing. I ended up knowing what the specialist publishers were in my field. So I have been publishing on extreme metal, which is fairly niche, since 2014. So I had a pretty good idea of who was publishing what and how they were publishing it. And some of the people that sit on the board so I'm publishing my monograph through Emerald, and some of the people on the board have been watching me at conferences and knew what I was doing with my PhD, and they kind of went, right, I want that. So when the PhD was done, I was approached by somebody from the board and said, do you want to do this proposal? And honestly, I was exhausted. I didn't even think that it was going to be something that I was going to do. I had to confront it, I think, in a lot of ways. My PhD is on a lot of trauma work, and it was a big deal to kind of reinvestigate it again. I wrote the proposal. I sent off two sample chapters, and then I waited. And then I found out last thing on a Friday, I remember, was I got an email saying, yes, this looks great, off we go. Then my feet didn't really touch the ground. And then I ignored it for a long time, which I shouldn't do.
Yes.
If I could just quickly go back to something that Phil said, the battle between a narrative form and academic language. We know it's beaten into us, isn't it? First year undergrad, don't you use I. And then when you get to a PhD, you're like, oh, but this other narrative really needs to come out. Exactly what Lyle and Jess were saying. How do you tie everything together? There needs to be a beautiful conversation between these chapters. How do I do it? I discovered something called autoethnography. So rather than me studying other people, I thought, well, hang on, I'm a person. I have experiences too. Why don't I try and critically evaluate, not be solipsistic about it? It needs to be very rigorous. How can I use that information as data for my research? Norman K. Denzin is your guy. And this shows you exactly how to incorporate a performative meaning bearer I in your work without losing any academic rigor at all. And once you get the hang of it, it's almost like you're saying hello to yourself again, which is a really lovely thing. But you do feel like you're kind of betraying all your academic training a little bit. But I found it a really wonderful way of including a narrative strand in amongst all the academic language as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. A really interesting question from Natalia. She says, when I think about my PhD, it overwhelms me. It was two volumes. Does the format change considerably from thesis to book? I'm going to come to you, Jess, on this one. And are we still at 100,000 words for the book?
With most publishers, yes, because there's a significant cost implication to going over that limit. So Jazz and I went over that limit for her, but we were told, no, you have to cut. What did we cut in the MC? Like 30,000 words or something we cut out? Something ridiculous.
33,000
words we had to cut. So we had to basically cut, you know, a quarter of the book. And we only had about 3 weeks in which to do it. There are some publishers who will let you go over that limit, but you need to establish that up front, that's what the position is. There are lots of ways of cutting it down. I mean, I have to say, we didn't actually find it that hard to cut it down, and the book is very much better for it. There are ways of doing it. So, for example, a really quick way of doing it, with a PhD thesis, you might have 20 or 30 pages of citations in your bibliography, but the publisher doesn't want that. The publisher wants a select bibliography of about 5 or 6 pages. So I think we cut about 5,000 words out just by doing that. So there'll be some things that will happen like that. But I think if you discuss with the publisher up front and just say, look, it's really long. At the moment, it is 110,000 words or whatever it is. Tell me what problems that gives you. Then you can have that conversation in a nice, timely way. Because it may be that when it goes through the editing process, a lot of stuff, like I say, a lot of the thesis-y flavoured stuff will get stripped out anyway, and that will probably make it shorter without you really having to try. But that 100,000 word limit is, I think, for most publishers quite fixed because it's an economic limit. It's not to do with the structure of the book per se or the saleability. It's just that it makes the books very expensive to produce as physical objects when they're over that length.
Thank you. Okay, we've got a question from Yvonne. At what stage do you recommend reaching out to publishers? In my case, wondering particularly for a thesis that is several years old that I would plan to do revisions on. Jessica, can I come to you first, and then I'd like to ask Lyle and Jazz what their sort of schedule was, what sort of stage they were at when they reached out to publishers. So
I think you can reach out to a publisher more or less any stage. I think you need to do it when you feel kind of emotionally ready to deal with the rejection, because there's inevitably going to be some. I don't think it really matters what stage you're at with your thesis, particularly, because I think your proposal is your proposal, and your proposal probably won't change enormously. And it can be a really lengthy process. So if you feel ready to start, I would just start, because it might take you several months, potentially a couple of years, to find the right home for your book. I would say a more important thing is to reach out and find a good editor, because that person, you can, as soon as you found it, the right person, it needs to be, I would emphasize, this is not me touting for business, I would emphasize it needs to be a good fit between you and your editor. There are people who approach me to work and I just say no, because I don't think we're a good fit. Either I don't like the piece of work, I don't want to spend a year reading their tedious book, or I just feel like the personalities don't work and that they're not going to understand the way that I'm attempting to improve their work. There are some people who are incredibly precious about their work, and I say, you need to take a comma out here, and they will fight me on every comma. It's like, that's not a good use of my time. And I don't get paid by those people, right? Those people are the ones who will then bitch about a £12 invoice. So I think finding an editor is actually a more useful thing to do. I would do that first and then find a publisher, because the editor can hold your hand through that process. The editor, you know, I've published as an editor 50 books, maybe. I probably read something like 200 PhD theses. So it's not my first rodeo. Whereas for you, it's the first time you've been through that process. And having going through that with someone who goes, no, this is normal. They don't want you. If they say 500 words, they really mean 500 words or whatever. That can be really helpful. It can take some of the stress out of that process. And finding an editor can be a really quick process that might take you a couple of days. Finding a publisher could take you a year. So I think, and it can be really lonely as well. Like getting knocked back by publishers can be really, really tedious. It can take up a lot of time. Just like Lyle says, like just chasing people. Hello, you've had my proposal for 8 months. That can be really tedious. If you can't bother to do it or you're really busy, you can say to your editor, look, can you chase this up? And often they will respond to me where they won't respond to the author. Not because, sometimes because they know me, but also often because it sounds like I'm an official person, if that makes sense. I'm like, hello, I am representing this person. Where is your response, please? And that will make them, oh, God, Christ, we haven't done anything. And even though I'm using exactly the same terminology and the same words and I'm being just as rude/polite as the author, sometimes they will just go, oh, a second person is involved now, so I'll reply. So I think that would be the way to do it, if I'm honest, because like I say, finding a publisher might take you absolutely ages and it can be really demoralizing. I think you need to feel that there's someone in your corner while you're doing that.
One last question. I don't think we've got any more from the floor. I'd just like to ask you, Jess, I've turned my thesis into several journal articles. Is that going to be a bar to producing a monograph?
Absolutely not. I think it's a really, really good thing for authors to do. All you need to do when you republish something that's already been in a journal is there's a little footnote that you need to put in. The publishers will talk you through this, but sometimes the publishers of the journal article, I'm saying, will talk you through this. But generally speaking, all you need to do is put, you know, a little footnote on page whatever, put the first page of this stuff that you've already published that says sections of this chapter appeared in part or in whole elsewhere prior to publication, and then you just put the citation in, right? So you say, so in Jazz's book, we've got a couple of sections where we say this, some of this chapter was presented at a conference, and we give the title of the paper and where the conference was and the date and all that stuff. And there's another section where we say part of this chapter has already appeared in, I think it's Metal Music Studies. Is that one? And then you just give the citation. And actually, the journals are usually really thrilled that you do that, because you're giving them a little shout out in your book, which they love. And the publishers really like it, because it means that article, that chapter or whatever, has already been peer reviewed. It's already been edited at least once, and it will be good. And so they don't mind that at all. I usually suggest wording that says, that's a little bit vague, a little bit fudge, that says some of this has appeared, because you might have changed it. you might have, you know, if it's 4 or 5 years old, you might, that gives you license to edit it or add more citations in or take stuff out that you no longer like. If it was something that you presented at a conference, you might have had a couple of really interesting questions as part of your presentation that made you go, oh, yes, I must write a paragraph about that. So it's really good idea to say in whole or in part or something like that, that, that fudges it a little bit so that you can get away with it not being word for word exactly the same. But it's no bar at all, and publishers are usually really keen on it.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Okay. Do we have any more questions? Anybody like to ask anything else of our panel? Okay. Right. Well, I think we've had a fantastic discussion. Really, you know, getting the nitty gritty of publishing. So thank you all so much. It's really good to have met you all. And thank you so much to our panel. We will be having more webinars, but if you've got any suggestions, do email us on info@ncis.org if you would like a webinar on particular topics or anything, because this is something we're working on a lot. This means we can all get together, as you've seen, from across the world, time zones permitting, and see and hear each other. And it's not quite like being at a conference, but it's pretty damn good, to be honest. While we don't even have to move out of our own houses. If there's any feedback, send it to info@. We'll be very pleased to hear from you, especially if it's good feedback.